When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
あ、ここいるんだ。
本当？見えないでしょ？どこにいるのかな？見えない。
あ、こんな
ところ。
あ、見せ
る。What's good, internet? Welcome to Waypoint Radio, episode 163?
Yes.
Did I get that right?
That's the right episode.
It is June 8th, 2018, and we are in our homes. We are not on a plane yet. We're flying out to LA tomorrow to go to E3. We'll define E3 in a moment. I'm Austin Walker. Joining me today, you've already heard the voice of Danielle Riendo.
Danielle E3 Riendo.
That's right.
It's my new name.
That's good. Also joining us, Patrick E3 Klepek.
I feel like E3 is like 3 weeks long now. I feel like we're actually late to E3.
Yes, 100%. 100%. And Rob E3, Zach Nee.
E for everyone, baby.
Zach Nee,
yeah.
3. Wait, E for everyone was a different event that happened that one time in Philly, remember?
E for everyone.
Does that anymore?
Well, that's good too.
Yeah, I mean, I know.
Wait, E for everyone wasn't that year they tried to. God, I'm getting my E3 lore confused.
No, you're thinking of the Santa Monica
year, open to the public,
right?
But then there was the Santa Monica year where they basically downscaled it. And who was it? Was it Guillermo from Ubisoft said it felt like a plumber's convention that year?
Oh my God, did he say that? That's very good.
Did.
That's very good. God, that's a very easy thing.
Wait, were there Mario games? Because, you know, hey.
Plumbers, I think that's probably definitely what he meant, was it was a lot of cosplay.
That was the very beginning of the Mario Rabbids relationship. I'll
I think
give you a
actually
plumber ease.
That was legit when Mario Galaxy was being shown.
Probably like, oh, there's just plumbers everywhere. All anybody would talk about was the plumber. No one would
plumber
talk
in a bee
about,
suit. What's up?
I'll tell you. We're going to talk about E3 today. I put out a call for questions on the last episode of Waypoint Radio, and then again just now on Twitter. We got some good questions that have come in about our E3 experiences, our hopes, our dreams, our fears.
E3's over. They're teasing a Metal Wolf Chaos a PC port from Devolver, so we're
is
done.
Is that where we want to start? Do we want to start with Metal Wolf Chaos questions? Because we got multiple
yes.
Metal Wolf Chaos questions.
Oh, good, because yes. I was going to shoehorn it in, but please continue.
Yeah, please, come on. Okay, we're just going to step into the Metal Wolf Chaos corner here. Let's start with that one. Let's start with a very, very broad one here, which is Deus Aquis asks, is Metal Wolf Chaos remake happening? Do you want to explain what you're talking about, Patrick?
We're in the lead up to E3, there are often a number of announcements made. Sony has actually done like a really good job of like capitalizing on this this mm-hmm. week, like kind of making an event out of each day. This is unrelated to that, but like, it's all to say there are often publishers will strategically announce things in the days leading up to E3 because it's easier to get headlines when you're not competing against the cyberpunks of the world during
right.
E3 itself.
The cyberpunks who hack in and take down your trailers.
Uh-huh, it's true. And Devolver is having a streaming press conference this year, from which I understand. Like, last year, it was a joke.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, they
but
didn't.
But they didn't communicate that.
They didn't.
Last
they,
year.
They understand that people didn't quite realize it was a joke and that this year's one is actually going to have, like, legitimate news and announcements. And so there is a teaser that went out from Devolver today with just sort of like a presidential symbol. And people, because the internet does, the internet does. And, like, they found out that if you match that up to the cover art for Metal Wolf Chaos, old From Software. Let's just call it a classic. I have not
we'll
played this
there.
Game, but I'm just going to go ahead and call it a classic, in which you play the President of the United States in a mech fighting back against I don't know what.
You don't know communists? What? Do you not know the pitch to this game?
No, I don't remember that.
I'm
going to
read
half.
From Wikipedia because it's very good. In the early 21st century, America has plunged into a state of civil and economic unrest, and several states attempt to secede from America to protect their own interests as a result, and as a result, leading to a conflict known as the Arizona Insurrection. During that time, Richard Hawke and Michael Wilson fight and crush the insurrection, paving way for the development of powerful military weapons. Michael Wilson, a relative of Woodrow Wilson, soon becomes the 47th president of the United States, drawing parallels to the real-life presidency of George W. Bush at the time of the game's release. Vice President Richard Hawke decides to usurp Wilson's presidency, shifting the armed forces' loyalty to him and attacking Wilson with their support. Hawke begins a reign of terror and makes numerous detrimental actions as president, from reinstituting slavery to committing outright atrocities. I think those are two separate things. This is a game about Dick Cheney overthrowing George W. Bush, is what this is a game about.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And then Wilson, Mike Wilson.
So you're playing as Bush?
You're basically playing as right. Exactly.
That's complicated, Austin.
It's a lot. It's very complicated. You have like a fun. It's a goofy fucking game.
America's forgotten its proud history of racist progressives, but as the heir to Woodrow Wilson's legacy, I'm bringing it back.
Oh boy!
Yeah. Wow. It turns out Rob's doing VO for this game.
Yeah, it's great. Welcome to being. So here's the thing about that game is that game.
Let me just finish. The timeline of this is that so they found this presidential symbol, matched it up to the box art, and then some other people started doing more sleuthing, which is that there was a popular Let's Play of that game on YouTube that prompted Fum Software to confusingly tweet out, why does something along the lines of, like, why do people care about Metal Wolf Chaos out of nowhere? And then in response to that, Devolver just straight up tweeted at one of the From Software designers being confused, saying, we'd love to talk about Metal Wolf Chaos. This is in 2016.
Yeah.
And so I think it's reasonable to expect that I think remake is probably like you should set your expectations lower than that. But
yeah, I think it's probably just a
remaster. It'll be cleaned up.
Maybe?
It'll be cleaned up.
By definition, bringing it to PC is sort of like a cleanup process. Like I don't know what kind of work they're going to do. The game would have to be localized, right? This wasn't
It's all in English. That's the thing with Metal
Wolf
Chaos.
But it wasn't released in America.
No,
right?
But it was all written. It was all voice acted in English.
Right.
But it had English American voice acting. That's the thing that's so fucked about it. It was on the Xbox, and the cover looked like. Have you seen the cover of this game?
Yes.
I'm gonna post it. It looked like this.
I need to see this.
This is the moment where you, as the listener, should be Googling the cover to
Metal Wolf
Chaos.
Just search for Metal Wolf Chaos and hit images. It's just
a big mech with
a thousand guns coming off of it, and the American flag burning in the background, and in the bottom right,
the presidential seal.
Not just the presidential seal, this special version of the presidential seal, which is the one that has been dug up, basically tied to this, or is it the one that they launched it, or they put it on their Twitter, right? It's the one that has like missiles and like mini guns held by the eagle instead of arrow, you know, like,
yeah,
it's a goofy. So I mean, this leads us to the second question here, which is, do you think the Metal Wolf Chaos thing Devolver is teasing is going to be one of those things where people finally get to play it and go, oh no, this game is actually kind of bad? That comes in from Ray on Twitter.
100%. That is the logical clue to this. But I want to live in that world. I want to go through the motions. I want to be disappointed, and I want to realize the game I've built up in my head is not nearly the game. Like, the satirical game that I'm looking for is probably not the game that is there, but I want to find out for myself because the concept is so ludicrous. And bigger picture, I would like to incur, like, not From Software aside, but also From Software specifically, would love to see more, like, essentially abandoned games, like, repurposed, released on the PC on a platform where once it's on the PC, even if a publisher abandons it, there will be a fan community that keeps it alive in a way that is fundamentally different than the sort of, like, gray area, like, pseudo-piracy that happens with emulation, which I encourage the efforts there. I'm glad there are folks doing the preservation work, but it's just easier on the PC once the code is there and, like, people have been paid to do the hard engineering work. So, like, the fact that it's there hopefully encourages more. I mean, Dead Alive 6 was announced today, and that game is going to come on PC. Like, I love this trend, partially because I play a lot of games on PC, but largely because it's, like, part of a larger preservation effort in video games that is just easier once that game is on PC.
There is two things. One, here's my counter argument to maybe this game is good, is there's absolutely a level in which you have to stop the Statue of Liberty from being destroyed by a big tank mech. And the health bars on the screen are Warner, which I think is the name of the enemy, Statue of Liberty, and Resistance. And that fight absolutely includes your mech doing a bunch of, like, ridiculous power wrestling moves to a tank. So, it's...
So that's a point in favor. I thought you were going to say something like, oh, no, like, something really, really negative or shitty, but that sounds like a point in favor that's for you,
yes,
for sure.
Yeah, okay. It's a thing that I'm glad we'll find an audience. I mean, this is from an era of FromSoft before people liked FromSoft very much, but we're doing interesting things, right? This is mid-Armored Core. This is Xbox One era Microsoft, or, FromSoft, so it's like Armored Core 3 era. It's what was that other really good Xbox series that they did that was like an action game?
Otogi.
The Otogi series is really cool. So they were doing cool shit, and I'm glad that people. I'm hopeful that people will get to see this. We had another question about this. Moosey on Twitter wanted to know, what if a sequel to Metal Wolf Chaos ended up being the fabled Mech Souls game? And I could.
Oh,
that
my.
Would be a lot to think. It's not. But
no. But like, wouldn't you love to see what Miyazaki would do? Somehow commenting on like Western politics. Uh-huh. Somehow.
Yep.
Somehow.
Weird open world, like, post-America devastation. Yes.
Fuck.
It'd be very interesting. Also, really quickly, I do want more things like from this era to come out, and also you can do a good job of remastering them. Not easily, necessarily, but like, so, I imported Front Mission 5 years ago, which is the only Front Mission that has never come to the States, I think. Maybe 2 didn't. In any case, 5 didn't, and 5 is dope, and also it's all in Japanese, except there is a fan patch online, and literally last night, I finally, like, fucked around with that fan patch and made it run on my computer with, like, 8 times, you know, upscaled and filtering on and blah, blah, blah.
PS2
and
or PS1?
It's a PS2 game. It's a PS2 game, but it looks great. And it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know, like, there is a way to do decent remasters of PS2 games and Xbox One games, original Xbox games, that look fantastic, and I'm hopeful that we start getting more of those, especially ones that didn't come out in our region, you know?
Nintendo, I don't know the game, but they are essentially allowing this Japanese publisher to put out a fetish game on the non-Japanese eShop marketplaces, and the game's not translated. It's clearly for like a very specific audience, but like I think that's cool that one, Nintendo of all people, and two, like, if a studio doesn't have the actual resources to do the localization, I think like exceptions should be made for them to allow them to, like, because maybe an audience is found that then allows, like, for the resources to be discovered to actually do the, you know, the work on localizing. I think stuff like that's cool, and those kind of barriers are – those are the kinds of barriers that should be taken down as opposed to, let's say, the approach Valve is taking.
Right.
Ha! Yeah.
Right. Which we should find time to talk about once some of that stuff continues to shake out as they give comment to other people and blah, blah, blah. All right, this one comes in from John, who says, what are your E3 worst-case scenarios? Do you have any tricks to avoid or escape them? Danielle, that was a laugh. I want to know what your worst-case scenario is.
Oh, God.
I mean, this is a little bit...
She doesn't get 3 workouts in, like, in between her meetings?
No.
Throwing shade at my lifestyle. Right there. Thanks.
Her fucking lifestyle. Her, like, thanks. Badass sports. Thanks.
Before we get...
Yeah,
before,
I like having these shoulders.
Before right. They're very good shoulders. Before we get to what your actual nightmare is, Rob also seems to have a speculative nightmare for Danielle. Please, Rob.
No, because I know Danielle lived it. I'm pretty sure I know the story Danielle's, like, has.
About the push-ups, like, and being ready for breeding?
Yep.
That's the one?
Excuse me?
Well, this is more of like a nightmare scenario that actually happened at E3 2010, I believe. I was there for Game Shark, RIP Game Shark.
Hell yeah.
I used to go, like, I went to like 3 E3s with Game Shark. It was great. Content warning right here for like some basically misogyny, I guess you'd probably call it, or sexism. And I was looking at one of the Call of Duties. You know, I was there. It was like the last day. Everybody was exhausted. And there was like the military advisor guy for one of the Call of Duties. Again, I don't remember which Call of Duty it was. And he was like, does anybody have a military question? We were waiting to go in. And there were like two other guys there. And they were just like basically asleep on their feet. And I was like, I want to make sure I can do military style push-ups. And he was like, wow, great question. And he like took me out into the hall and we were doing like military style push-ups. And as I was doing this push-up,
where
he was
is
like,
this happening?
At the Activision booth.
Oh my God. Okay.
Or at, not the booth, rather, like, you know, the sort of appointment areas, the little sort of meeting rooms that they have.
Right, right, right.
This
yes,
was like
okay.
in a hallway oh, I, yeah, at E3. This is like a public place.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is a public place. This was not like in a creepy alleyway or anything, but it was just so bizarre. And he just started like making comments about my body. It was just like, whoa, like being really fucking creepy. And then he definitely said, oh, you were just made for breeding. Like in the most like,
Jesus
I can't help
Christ.
But laugh. I'm sorry. I can't help but laugh. Cause it's the most like crew cut man, like extreme. I don't know. That was a little
breeding
fucked up.
Is a term.
That's a, like the, yeah, like the use of
yep.
that word specifically says,
A lot
about that person.
A lot.
No, that,
I mean,
that
it was...
dude, like Handmaid's Tale, is that dude's Harry Potter? Like,
God, true, very true.
Christ.
Anyway, a true E3 story right there.
That's a nightmare. That's a capital N nightmare. A
little bit shitty. It was just like, honestly, I laughed because it was such a weird situation, and also that he was like, it's. Uncommon for a dude who has that sort of attitude about a woman's body to also be like really into like a fit woman. So it was very like in my brain, it was very like, what the fuck? Like it was very, yeah, it's a weird one.
Well,
anyway,
you've gone outside the envelope of like everyday awkwardness straight into like
right.
Coen Brothers territory.
Uh-huh.
Right. This was a special version of awkward misogyny at E3. So yeah, that was a thing that happened.
Jesus Christ. Any other nightmares? Any other things that qualify as nightmares?
How could I top that? I feel like we just bow out and move on to the next question.
For a game, and it was a bad game instead of a good game. That's my nightmare. No, you can't. No.
What if that guy said you were great for breeding? I don't know. I guess the same thing could happen to you.
The same thing could happen to us, 100%.
Right?
Well, yeah. Yeah, you know what? If someone told me I was good for breeding, there is a history here. There's like historical context that would also be
exactly.
fucked up.
That'd be pretty fucked.
It'd be pretty fucked up. No, here's what I'll say is we actually had a moment last year, which maybe Patrick should even, which is sometimes you have lots of people at an event and you lose one of them for a little while. And you're like, what happens to
oh,
our
no.
friend? Patrick, do you want to explain this story? Rob, do you want to explain this story? Rob should
oh,
explain
God.
This story.
I can't explain it because, okay. like, I was a passenger for this story.
Well, the night before, one night we podcasted extremely late. I think to
extremely
like
late. 12, one
or 30
something, or
something
yeah,
12, like that.
Yeah.
And Rob still lived in the area at the time. So he's like, "Hey, I'm just gonna go home." But I was like, "Rob, you seem extremely tired," and so he went home. But then. I believe the part of the context is the day before that, like you didn't sleep the night before, basically.
Right. The
like,
night before
at
the,
all.
The night that we did the long podcast. So you were on like hour 40 or something.
Yeah. Oh, it was not in a good place. And
or 30.
So,
yeah.
Like slept, you know, well, I'm going to say, I don't know. Let's in my mindset. I don't know what happens the next morning. We wake up and go to E3 and just like text Rob to see where he's at and like get no response for like 6+ hours. We're like late afternoon. Like, did he go to his appointments? What happened to Rob? Did Rob get into like a car accident?
Because right, we had other meetings set up where it was supposed to be like, oh yeah, Rob and Austin will check in and talk about Kingdom Come Last Deliverance was probably the game that you were supposed to, or maybe it wasn't that one. It was something else because we did talk about that game on the podcast eventually. But it was some other appointment where it was like, oh yeah, we're going to meet and talk about this thing. And it was like, oh, I can't get in touch with Rob. Is Rob okay? And
yeah, and I was just, and then like I started going through increasingly like more nightmare scenarios, where is he? Like, why wouldn't he just respond to a fucking text? I was like, do we need to get in touch with a significant other? Like, find out, like, we need to check in with Rob and like see where Rob is. And then just like later in the afternoon, he was just like, I'm here. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, could have used that
well,
like 9 in the morning.
Well,
Zach,
no, so here's the thing. He did give it at 9 in the morning to me, and I was so tired, I forgot. And so. or like, you know what it was? It was like, it was,
and
not,
I was
that
asking I, you, like,
right, well,
I think
the thing
we
is,
gotta
I didn't
be
know where he was.
You're
like, where is Rob? And like, I don't know where he is. He didn't, I from what I can tell, he didn't show up to this meetup for me. He didn't show up to this other appointment. I hope he's okay. But like, in my mind, I'm like, I know he's not dead because he talked to me this morning, but we were still having a conversation that was like, I don't know where he is because neither of us did know. And thankfully, the answer is getting rest that he needed and was fine, and then just was fine. That would be a nightmare. A real nightmare would definitely be a health crisis or like an accident or some sort of like anything that would be like – that would hurt anyone I care about, you know?
Yeah.
Not so much. They didn't announce Mech Souls, which I don't think they're going to do anyway.
Oh.
You know, it was an odd, like, it was weird when I saw Patrick later that day and he's looking at me like I'd returned from the dead. Like, he's giving that look of, like, oh, man, this person, like, has survived a near-death experience. When, for me, like, the way this went down was I was, like, dead on my feet, exhausted the night before. I drove home. I crashed into bed. I woke up at like 9:15, 9:30, texted Austin.
Yep.
And then I was like, I'm going to be late for my 10:30. That was my first appointment that day. And so I had to reschedule that. And then I booked it down to E3. And then I had like a half-charged phone that I think I was like powering on and off because like it was so little charge because I'd forgotten to put it on. That, like, I was basically just trying to stretch a sliver's worth of battery for an entire day of E3.
Right.
And so, like, once you're in your E3 schedule, it's really easy to also just kind of go dark and go from thing to thing to thing to thing. And so later, sort of, when I resurfaced, and everyone's like, where the fuck were you? I'm like, pretty much the same schedule as yesterday, like just going to meetings. I slept in a little.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was very funny. I guess on the more mundane front, there are those sorts of like worst case scenarios of sleeping in or of these are nowhere near breeding or I think my friend is hurt. But here's one that has happened to me is like you go into a demo for a game and you're the only one in the demo and you can tell immediately the game is not going to do well or that it's not where it needs to be. And the person there cares about it a great deal and has worked really hard on it.
I have a specific one for
same.
That.
What is yours?
Okay. There was a game, and I actually played it later in life, and it was kind of fun. But there was a game where they actively were so dejected by the response of people. This is something, actually, believe it or not, Tom Chick of Quarter to Three fame described this once upon a time. But we were there. It was a game that you sort of physically, I think it was like a very early Kinect game where you were walking through basically a haunted house scenario. I don't remember the name of the game. It was not very good, but they had a fog machine that they had in this little booth to sort of create atmosphere.
All right.
Like for this game. And by the end of the day, they turned it off because they were so dejected by like people's very lukewarm response to their not amazing game. And you could, like, still smell the fog machine. Yeah. And it was, like, turned off in the corner. And it was very, like, oh, buddy.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I had a demo of Agents of Mayhem last year or the year before.
Austin, you and me both.
We weren't in the same group.
Not in the same demo, but like this is the one that started with like a 30-minute PowerPoint presentation about the game, and then the game loaded up, and within like 30 seconds, you were like, no.
Yeah.
And for me, even worse, I had booked this demo, and I don't like, sometimes you got to cancel things. But, like, if I made a commitment to, you know, to go see something, you know, I'm going to roll the dice. And I generally wanted to see that game because I liked a lot of the Saints Row games.
But I was here for, I was like, for what I'm seeing, this doesn't look great, but I'm gonna give it a shot.
But I had passed on a friend of mine that works at Nintendo saying, like, hey, if you want to sneak in and come play, like, 45 minutes of Breath of the Wild, like, I'll just get you in to go play it. And I was like, yes, but, like, I have this demo, and maybe it'll... My hope was, oh, I'll get in for a 30-minute hands-on. Like, I'll just do it for 10 minutes and say, I'm sorry, like, I'll excuse myself. And then I got stuck in this 30-minute presentation, and then someone hovering over my shoulder while playing the game, and I felt locked in a way of, like, I have to just ride this out and, like, pretend I'm interested. And yeah, it was actually uncomfortable because, like, immediately I knew, like, this game is not particularly good. They're not going to save this in the next year and a half. They're going to work on this game, and which was demonstrated by the game that I did play when it came out. It was not fundamentally different than.
So I got that presentation, and then I got a, like, all right, you can just hang out and play for, like, any amount of time. And they gave me the controller, and it was, like, open-ended, and it was just like, go ahead and play. Do whatever. And I was there with a story writer or a character writer. And I mean, this is the second half of this question. It's like, what are your best techniques for dealing with a situation like this? Like, I was playing it, and I could tell the feel wasn't quite there. And I knew that I didn't think that the narrative stuff was a thing that people would respond well to. You know, there were things there that I thought worked. There were jokes every once in a while that I thought worked, but by and large, I don't think it was hitting its stride. But my technique for handling a situation like that is, like, whoever is there presenting the game, especially if they're on the dev team, has a million interesting stories and perspectives on the thing that they've put all this time into, and just, like, have a conversation about that. You know, I think a lot about in academia, there's a lot of stress around kind of presentations of your work and, like, you know, whether that's your dissertation defense or, you know, even just presenting something at the end of a semester. The thing that I always try to remember whenever I was doing something like that was, like, oh, this is my field of interest. This is me. I know this stuff, and I'm actually super excited to talk about it. And that's the case with developers who have spent a lot of time on their games. And so, like, if you can get them out of pitch mode and get them out of, like, trying to explain to you why people should buy this game and get them talking about problems that they solved and interesting, you know, speed bumps on the road to development and how they figured out this character or this special ability or what their favorite build is, you can get them animated and excited in a way that can bring energy to something that you're not necessarily, again, you know, okay, this game, I'm playing this game isn't for me, I don't know if this game is going to find a big audience, I don't even know that I have a particularly interesting angle to talk about it later. One, you can find one of those angles by having a genuine connection and a genuine conversation with the other person, and two, you could just make that whole experience so much brighter by basically bringing that person and, you know, bring them around the table and having them sit next to you in a sense, you know, metaphorically, instead of sitting across from you. You know, turning it from an interrogation into a conversation. So that's my advice to escape that particular It can be hard when you're just stuck with some of the other thing can happen though. You're like, oh, hey, I have a question. They're like, yeah, I just got put on this. I don't know. I'm a PR person who doesn't know this game at all. Sorry. But even then, it's like, well, how's your partner? You know, it's like, try to find conversation. Try to talk to people. Any other worst case scenarios from E3?
I just don't want to, like, have a medical emergency on the show floor. Yeah. I, like, literally talked about this with my therapist the other day. I was like, I'm very afraid of having a panic attack on the show floor, and then 50,000 people see me, like, looking ridiculous. But I also said, well, I'll just text Rob, and he can, like, put me on his shoulder and walk out.
Exactly.
So
it'll be great.
It'll be fine. I volunteered
if
you,
if
Rob.
If his phone is on.
Jesus. If his phone, that's it true. Rob, can I just make sure you charge your phone this time?
Actually, today I'm running batteries. Out of getting a battery backup.
Yes,
up.
Same.
Okay, nice.
Like, I'm going to go to Best Buy and be like, what is the most lavish USB battery pack?
You'll wear it. You'll be wearing it like a stole.
Like a fucking laser tag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like a laser tag vest. Yeah. God.
Okay, so I've got a couple little scenarios that I'd like you to contemplate for E3. Scenario one. You've recently changed jobs. At your old job, there was a problematic coworker with you with whom you had a notoriously bad relationship.
Oh, no.
You're at E3, doing your new job. You departed your old job under good terms. Your coworker did not.
Oh, no.
you are now forced to deal with each other in a fucking demo booth because they are working for someone at E3. And so you run into basically like your old office nemesis, and now you just have to pretend that all that history is like dead and gone. But it was basically last week. And on the one hand, you're dealing with the pettiness of, like, I want to continue this vendetta. But at the same time, you're also undeniably both in different positions in your life, and that old, like, dynamic and power relationship is gone. And so, at the same time, your feud now seems preposterous. And so you are just thrown into this, like, complete state of emotional confusion while you're attempting to focus on the mediocre game they're showing you.
God.
Scenario two, you are in a very small demo for an RPG, and it is the stereotypical, like, we're making a hardcore RPG for real RPG fans. This is not a baby game. Let us show you the many features this game has. The kill a monster. The crate appears. They're like, in that crate, there is loot. This is one of the features of our game. We have the best loot. Do you like loot? We have so much loot. This is what separates us from other RPGs on the market. Many times when you kill an enemy, they will drop these crates, and you get good loot from them. Any questions?
Oh my god.
Do you have a t-shirt?
Yeah, do you have a t-shirt that just says that? Like, do you have a crate t-shirt that I could wear, please? I want the swag. But, like, truly one of the most awkward scenarios I was in was, again, this I think was at GDC, actually. It might have been at E3, but, like, it was in one of those, it's not a full booth, it's in one of those, like, expo areas where people basically just set up, like, tables and stands to show off their games. So it's, like, a lot of indie stuff ends up there, a lot of, like, smaller publisher stuff ends up there. There was this game, I'm going to be specific here, because it stands out in my mind, and it is, like, if you look it up, it is just vivid trash. It's a game called Blue Estate, which is a rail shooter based on some, like, line of comics that I certainly have never
come
across.
Oh!
It all makes sense now.
I remember this game. Yeah, I remember this game.
There are only two of us at this appointment. It's me and a young woman working for IGN. I don't remember which reporter it was. All I was aware of is, here's a young woman. I became increasingly aware of that incredibly misogynistic trailer and gameplay reel unfolds in front of us, which is just like, isn't it, like, you know, standard, like, violence against sex workers and strippers.
You know, standard stuff. Just standard video game bullshit, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck. Like, it's very much like, oh god, what was that one? It was made with the Unreal Engine, the really ultra-violent, run-up high scores.
Bulletstorm?
Yeah, Bulletstorm. It was like that, but even dumber and meaner.
Okay.
And so, like, they're just running through all this, and it's just, like, it looks like a terrible game. It's a rail shooter, for Christ's sake. It's, like,
right.
2012, and they're like, yeah, here, it's basically a light gun game, but no, we don't,
but no light
we don't
gun,
have a light
right?
gun.
Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
Here's your gamepad. But anyway, so they finish their presentation, and the guy giving the presentation is, like, has no... It's one of those things where, like, you're watching this thing, you're like, somebody should feel ashamed of this, right? Like, at some point, he needs to be aware of how incredibly offensive and alienating this is to begin with, but also, perhaps the presence of a young woman reporter should really drive that home, and you can see sort of the frozen mask she's currently wearing as she's trying to get through this meeting. But no, he's, like, incredibly high on his supply. He's like, this game is so funny. This is one of my favorite parts. We have a mechanic where you have to brush your hair out of the out of your character's eyes. It's great. You just sweep up with the joystick. Isn't that cute? And then he's like, so you guys want to play it? And immediately, like, she just, like, turns to me with a smile and is like, I prefer to watch games like this, but you should play it. You should play it, and I'll just watch from back here. And, like, she didn't want to touch it, and so I had to, like, commit myself to this. And, like, she's basically gone over my shoulder, like, once I start playing. Like, she's like, oh, I got another appointment.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
Gotta go.
Yeah.
And then he's got me, and he's like, okay, well, more time for us to talk then. And you can just ask me any questions you have about this.
So you had the thing which is, like, you can't do my technique on that game, or on that scenario, because that game looks terrible. Like, not just like, oh, this isn't gonna work, but, like, bad, and you have bad thoughts about it.
Yeah.
You don't want to know how that team landed. I mean, maybe you do out of a curiosity, how did you wind up here? But
and the person demoing it had that vibe of, like, the person in the comic book shop who reads the books that shouldn't be printed and is really super into them and wants to, like, corner you on them. Like, he even came across that sort of way. And so it was just one of the, like, most skin crawling encounters.
Yeah.
Like, give me the loot guys any day. You know what I mean? Like, they're just delusional. They think that they've invented, like, loot tables, or they're like, you know, that is their unique selling point for their RPG. This guy's unique selling point is, like, look at that fat mermaid in this fish bowl.
Oh,
you can shoot the ball.
Oh, cool. Great. All right. Let's go somewhere lighter. How about that? Okay. We got a question, same question in from kind of two people. Slightly different, I guess. Slightly different. But Katie on Twitter says, what are your three favorite words to start with the letter E? And Michael from Boston writes in to say, hello, Waypoint Radio crew. Here's a question about E3. If you could make the three E stand for anything, what would it be? Thanks. Which are slightly different questions, but I'm pairing them together. Three favorite E words.
Oh.
Everyone
I like
eat,
electronic
everyone
is
eating.
A word.
What could everyone eat?
Eggs.
No. I mean, eggs are good.
Eggs are good.
It got me
entrails.
Weirder.
No.
What?
I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. That's why I'm like, what?
Everyone eating.
Look, I've been doing this agony video review, okay? There's been a lot of entrails.
That's true.
Food with E words. Enchiladas?
Edamame?
Either of those I'm good with.
Yeah.
E-food. Everyone eating E-food. E-food is my new blockchain solution to the food problem.
No. Oh, no.
For a long time, people have wondered, what is eating? And now, finally, I have an answer. E-food.
What is eating?
Every time you eat, you'll be rewarded by our algorithm, and you'll acquire food bits.
Or what we like to call food bees.
Honestly, like, my dream scenario for this is E3 becomes the Eastern Electronic Expo.
Ooh.
And is based out of Boston. That's my dream scenario. Like,
not Japan, not Russia, not like the not like East. No, okay, not Eastern Europe.
That's not bad. Yeah,
just Boston.
Oh wait.
Uh-huh, see?
Wait, hold on, you got me with the last one.
Uh-huh, Eastern Europe, let's go.
Okay. Eastern European Expo!
There it is.
I think that's called Gamescom.
Yeah,
you're right, that is called Gamescom. They already have that one.
No, but I want a small one, like, just a small one, though. Gamescom's too much. I want the Stalker Expo.
Yeah,
the games the Stalker has inspired.
Fair.
Excellent.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think of a Tarkovsky E for your Stalker thing. Wait, excellent Tarkovsky with an
what?
E
no.
At the end.
No.
Boo. Fine.
Boo.
Fine.
Good hustle, but boo.
It's like somebody cranking up the difficulty on Dance Dance, and just like they just stand there as the arrows go by.
All right, I got one. Dance Dance Revolution, and it's just the E's are all capitalized. The same joke that Danielle just made.
Isn't that good?
Yeah. All right, let's keep moving. We're bad at E words, apparently. This one comes in from Riley on Twitter, who says, "What is your longest shot hope for each press conference?" You know, let's not do each because there are about a billion press conferences, but what is your longest shot? Just as a reminder of all of the different press conferences now. What do we have? We have Microsoft, Sony, Ubisoft, Nintendo Direct, Devolver,
Bethesda,
Square Enix. the PC gaming show.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that's the list. I think. EA.
Longest shot. Okay, so Jason Schreier at Kotaku, I don't know where this happened, but in a comment thread about speculation over Shadows Die Twice, revealed From Software game at the Game Awards last December, which we don't know much about and where it fits and what the context is of that game. But he apparently had said like the publisher will surprise people. And so then in my mind, I was thinking, well, who like would be surprising? And then I was like, oh, like maybe like Konami would be like a surprise publisher. And then I was thinking, like, what if From Software made a new Silent Hills game?
Oh,
that would be.
Like, I'm trying to think like who would be interesting to like who would be able to in a moment wipe away all of the anger over PT.
Yeah.
And like a studio like From Software saying we're going to return to Silent Hill and we're going to, you know, bring our expertise and our thoughtfulness to that, like From Software, the way they do cryptic storytelling, almost everything about them in the way that Silent Hill has always had horrible combat and yet always had combat.
Uh-huh.
And their designs are always monstrous and grotesque. I'm sure that they are the kind of studio that could like incorporate this sort of like fleshy, a body horror tone of Silent Hill. So, like, in my mind, it's probably not true that Shadows Die Twice could secretly be a Silent Hill game, but my long shot, like, wild out there, like, desire is that was all a charade, and actually, From Software is making a Silent Hill reboot.
Shadow
for
starts
Konami.
With an SH, you know?
Sure. Yep.
So.
And that trailer was like fleshy and weird. So
yeah, and you know? Shadows Die Twice. Like we already did, we tried to do Silent Hills and it failed, and so now we're going to try it again, and it's probably going to fail again a second time. You know, so, Shadows Die Twice.
As I was trying to, I thought that one raced through my head for a hot minute last night, and so I think that's
pretty good.
That's
pretty good. He, Jason Schreier said that on there's two Kotaku podcasts, and I'm getting their names confused. Split Screen is the Schreier Hamilton one,
yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That is correct. So yeah, that is where he said that. Any other hopes from these big press conferences?
I know I'm going to get some kind of Prey something.
Yeah, you're definitely.
Which makes me
very
happy.
% getting. That's like DLC. That's going to be like Prey 1 new DLC.
We know that's happening.
I know. I'm saying I know I'm going to get something, okay. Which makes me very happy, but another full Prey, which I know won't happen.
That would
ever.
Be a big surprise.
You know, I don't rule anything.
It might happen. It might happen
company.
One day. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to be happy with DLC. I'm not saying I won't be.
Although
I'm
Arcane's
thrilled.
Pretty hollowed out at this point, right?
I wouldn't say that either.
I hear both of those teams are rapidly prototyping,
but that's they have repurposed them and they're working on new stuff.
Yes,
but it's no longer the Harvey Smith, Raphael Colantonio.
So I thought I heard Raphael left, but is Harvey gone too? Did Harvey?
No, I haven't heard that Harvey's left.
No, I think Harvey is still there, isn't he?
Yeah.
They are
putting those studios on new projects and figuring that stuff out. So those teams are not going away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if I have a good one. If I have a good thing that I would love to see that isn't just going back to the well with like, oh, Mecha Soul
another
game.
From Software thing.
You know, I my longest shop hope is that I leave Anthem feeling like super good. But that's not even a conference thing. I mean, that'll be at EA, but, you know, I'm more concerned with a hands-on time with that at this point.
Is, like, any long-shot, like, strategy stuff? Like, I'm trying to think, like, long-shot, you come out thinking you want to play Gears of War Tactics.
No, I don't, because it's going to be that's one of the main rumors for Microsoft. So there's multiple Gears games coming, and, like, I don't care.
I know, but, like, what if you did?
Like, what if Gears XCOM? No. Like, I don't know. I don't care about that world enough. I mean, I guess I could imagine an aesthetic that brought me back in, but, like, I just don't want to play that world. Like, the world is beautiful. The world itself has always been beautiful, but I don't like the character design
so much.
It's a
long shot. It's a long shot
that
you would like Gears of War Tactics.
That's fair. What if it's like, what if, oh, here's a long shot, Alan Wake 2. We know Remedy is doing something, right?
We know Remedy is doing something. It's likely to be announced at E3.
But, yeah.
They called it like Project 7 or something, and they have said it's narrative focused.
Yeah.
But we don't know what that means. We don't know like what the scope of that is going to be.
Yeah.
It probably won't have a bad television show attached to it.
That would be great, honestly. If it didn't do that, that'd be cool. I mean, I don't know, Rob, you were big on Quantum Break, right?
I think it's fascinating.
Rob is right. I played this game a couple of years back when it came to Steam, and it is, yeah, it's not Alan Wake, but like it, if you like Remedy's shit, you 100% should play Quantum Break.
Man, and the way the TV show doesn't relate to the game at all.
Oh, it's so awful. I actually started just skipping those sequences.
Wow,
because they were worthless. They were worthless.
Wait, you didn't like watching Carcetti and... What's the lieutenant's name?
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, you didn't like watching the Wire reprise. Like what if these guys? What if it was the Wire but really budget sci-fi?
That does sound like a good pitch. Unfortunately, Quantum Break did not allow that to pan out.
So I think I figured it out. I figured out what I want. Here it is, Ubisoft. Halfway through the show, this is only a half of a joke. Clint Hawking comes on stage because he's back there now, right? He rejoined Far Cry 2-2.
Oh boy!
Far Cry 2-2. No,
okay.
It's just what is Clint Hawking working on? I want to see what Clint, who was the creative director on Far Cry 2, I believe he was creative director. He was at least a designer on it. Would be, I want to know what his project is. Like
he has specifically said, I believe when he joined that, like he wasn't interested in Splinter Cell. He came out up front and said that's not what he was coming back to do, which would have been kind of disappointing to just go back and make.
Well,
It's been 7 years since he's published a game.
Yes, it's been way too long since he's published a game. I think the
he's
last
worked on
one...
like two different major projects that just didn't like pan out. One at Amazon and one at
LucasArts. Yeah. So I mean, he went to LucasArts. He left UB to go to LucasArts, then left LucasArts to go to Amazon. Or did he go into Valve? He went to Valve for a little while.
Valve stopped over.
Yes,
thought,
right? And then he went to Amazon after
Amazon,
that.
where people go to get paid a lot and work on a project that will never ship.
That we'll
is
never
basically...
see ever. But here's my pitch. We do believe that there is a Splinter Cell coming. It was part of the Walmart leak. We know that they got what's Sam Fisher's actor's name again?
He was in a DLC for
Ironsides.
Ironsides, Michael Ironsides.
Yeah.
No one believes they got him. That they got Michael Ironsides to do like 7 lines or whatever for the Wildlands DLC. What I want is a sequel to Metal Gear Solid 5, directed by Clint Hawking. That is open world Splinter Cell.
After Ubisoft press conference.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, not actually Metal Gear Solid, but I'm saying, like, conceptually, the next Splinter Cell is an open-world stealth action game in the vein of Metal Gear Solid 5 that extends that genre the same way that Metal Gear Solid 5 extended the Far Cry 2 genre, you know? And that's it. That's what my hope would be for that project. I don't want a level-based stealth action game at this point. Do you know what I mean? I don't want just, like... I mean, I guess I would play that game if the levels were really good, right? But I want Clint working in and Clint's team working in that same space, especially given how – did you all see that clip from that DLC? There's a really good moment in which Michael Ironside's Sam Fisher is basically being told he's the last of his kind, and he literally name drops Snake, or he doesn't actually use the name, but he's like, what about the guy?
It's really good.
Yeah, he's like, what about the guy with the bandana? And his like handler is like, yeah. He's gone too, and he's like, shit, it really is only me. And it's just a really good moment. And like, I know we have lots of like old dad games at this point, and so whatever
that
but
is a deeply silly I'm sorry that is a deeply silly clip. Like watching it,
it's very good.
Like,
I love it.
Sam Fisher looks surprised that he's in this game. Like, yes, he's also shocked by the news that like The guy with the bandana is gone, but he is also stunned that he's in Wildlands. Like, literally, it's like he wandered onto the set.
Yeah,
and
true.
It's like, oh, great, great. We're just going to, you know what, just riff with it. Yes and, right?
Yep, yep. So there, yeah, that's my hope. That's my long shot. Any other long shots?
Rob, come on.
You got to get dig, Rob.
All right. The Electronic Arts Conference.
Okay, well, we already have to stop right there. Because no one said the words Electronic Arts on a stage in 15 years.
And, well, hold on, though.
Uh-oh.
The Electronic Arts, like, logo comes up. Followed by the old LucasArts logo.
Ooh.
And then the sound of a TIE fighter going past.
Okay, yeah.
Like the old sound check, the old iMuse sound check and everything like that. You know, we've heard you. We understand that, you know, we're not living up to the legacy of the Star Wars license and the Star Wars games. And that's why in 2019... we're bringing back TIE Fighter.
Aww.
Yeah, I'd be here for it.
Yep.
What if it was that, and also it was set in the fictional world of that dope anime TIE Fighter
video
that went around recently?
Shit, yes.
Or not recently, it's been a few years now. Dog, my real mind is not great. Look up TIE Fighter short film or TIE Fighter remastered Star Wars anime. Just TIE Fighter anime. It's a dope, like, 7-minute anime sequence about TIE Fighter.
We can all agree that there's a real love for the aesthetics of fascism in that short film.
Oh,
right?
It's bad. It's not. I mean, that's just TIE Fighter. That's just the fucking Star Wars. You know. It's bad out there for the Empire. People look like fascists. They are fascists.
Hey, question. All right, so follow up on this in this dream scenario. So EA is not going to make that game, right? Like, this is going to be an outside collaboration. So to take the dream further, like, who makes that game?
Well, they bring Lawrence Holland out of retirement. Right. Like,
Okay, but who's making like legitimately?
Because
making a TIE Fighter game is not actually like that's not totally outside the realm of possibility. Like, who makes that game in 2018?
Gosh, that is a tough one. Because like, I think Frontier maybe.
Frontiers.
But Elite is so simmy though.
Yeah, but they could do Arcadia.
They could.
They're capable of it.
And
right?
More than that, what Elite has is the ability to like immerse you in the idea of like living and control, like living in a sci-fi universe and like controlling a physical ship. Like an important thing that I think the old like is Ralph McQuarrie like designs for Star Wars, right?
Yeah.
Like an important thing about that sort of modeling and creation that those teams did is like it was very easy to have like almost like a tactile relationship with Star Wars shit. Like you could imagine how it felt, how it like worked, how what it was like to live with, interact with. And I think that is something like Frontier is actually very good at evoking in their game. So I could totally see them being a studio that could execute on that.
Also, if the Star Citizen team can be producing 30 games at once, then Frontier can do a couple. I guess Frontier also doing this Jurassic Park game right now? So yeah, you know, they're finished their ship that, then they're going to work on TIE Fighter. Love it.
Okay.
Love it.
Yeah, that's good.
All right. Patrick, did you say yours? I know, Danielle, you said Prey 2-2. Silent Hill.
Prey 2-2.
Prey 2-2. Right. Far Cry 2-2 for me. Silent Hill 2-2 from Patrick. And TIE Fighter 2-2. Yeah,
got it. We got all the 2-2s.
Got all the 2-2s. Love it. All right, this one comes in from username on Twitter, Born to Die, World is a Fuck. Is E3 fun? ?
Yes and no.
What's fun about it?
What's fun about it for me is seeing all of you and getting to spend time with my whole team, because we don't get to do that very often, you know? That's like a couple times a year, so that's super fun. That's nice. And there's a sort of element of the not fun part feeding into the fun part, which is, you know, after a couple of days, everybody's very tired.
Yeah.
And we're all kind of like in the trenches together a little bit. And there's like a camaraderie about that. And that's not just us. It's also any other sort of like our friends. Like, yeah. So, like, we see our friends from Polygon. We see our friends who might work as developers. And you're all just like, how you doing, man? Like, yeah. There's this sort of, like, almost joyful complaining about it that's actually almost a little bit fun.
Right.
In a very bizarre way. And also, yeah, there usually are at least a couple of games that I am, like, head over heels. This is why I love games. Just like, you know, when Donkey Kong Country Returns was announced and I whooped.
Right.
And nobody else did, but I don't care. That was great.
yeah, I think that's totally the fun of it for me is seeing people. And I don't know. I think I've said this before, but like I definitely am. I can be a workaholic. And E3 is one of the times of the year where that workaholism pays off instead of just being a bad thing. instead of just being a thing that like has lots of costs with like a long-term bigger cost. Like you get a little bit of a gain from being a workaholic, but you mostly get negatives. At E3, like I'm in my fucking mode. I'm in my zone. I love being pushed to the brink like that. The same reason I do well on like marathon streams and stuff like that is just it opens me up as a person and I find a way to be a little smarter and a little funnier and a little more I'm trying to think of like a little more on my game when I'm in the mode for longer. I'm still sleeping. You know what I mean? I tend to still get a lot of sleep at E3.
What's a lot for you?
Well, that's the thing, right? It's like, clear. I already don't sleep that much.
Yeah, exactly.
Now. I train all year for E3.
Exactly.
I get up at E3, I get to sleep for 6-7 hours. You kidding me? Forget about it. You know?
This is your tournament. This is how I approach tournaments.
But really what it is, now that I'm thinking about it, it's about being in the on mode. Like for multiple days in a row to where I get over the hump of hating being on and then just being in it. And like, it's sort of like how the best parts of any podcast are like 30 minutes to an hour in where like you or any roundtable podcast like this, where it's like, oh, they've loosened up and everyone's just like in their mode. I just get in that mode. I love being in that mode. And then I love seeing people. And I really love seeing people who are passionate about their projects, and I feed off of that energy. I love meeting people who, like, don't have a booth and who are like, yo, let me just open up my laptop real quick.
Yeah.
Like, meet me in the lobby. I want to show you this cool thing, you know? That stuff is so exciting to me because people have worked so hard to get their project in state where they want to show you it and like where it's showable, you know? It's one of the reasons why I really like PAX also, compared to E3 is there's lots more of that stuff. But you know, you still find it here and there at E3. You still find the person who's like, hey, can I show you my phone game really quick? And as long as it's not like 30 of those and I'm not like on my way to go see CD Projekt Red. Sorry, they're doing construction outside and just air horning. I'm good. Like it gives me a boost to see someone who's like, yo, just check out the physics on this phone game I made or whatever, you know? So that's my part of it that is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same way in terms of seeing people. I work from home and I hate it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. It's something I chose. It's given me all sorts of different benefits in my personal life, but it's like very isolating and it's easy to become like cynical and sort of lost to your own thoughts. And so like I deeply appreciate the time to not only spend with my team, but just like talk to other people like in person in general. Like that is just like a really fulfilling thing. And personally, and also like I still get wrapped up in like getting hyped for like press conferences and stuff like that. Like it's nice to be reminded like this was a hobby that I turned into a career. And
yeah.
Like it's nice to be reminded about the hobby part and like the fan part. And to realize that you can kind of get wrapped up and excited and surprised, you know, even as someone that like, you know, whose job is to be a reporter and to learn things that they're not supposed to know and things like that. But, like I still get excited when like a press conference starts and I'm like, I don't know what's going to be shown. Like
even this year, the year of Leak 3, there are still some things we do not know.
It's every year. Like I mean, like just a couple of years ago when like RE7 was shown, like I had no idea that game was coming. I had no idea it was going to be this first person reinvention. It was like everything I was hoping for and didn't know I wanted. And like when they just dropped like RE7 and it's coming out in 6 months, like I did like a legitimate like like I was a poster on Reddit. Like I was like like in my house just like screaming.
Yeah.
And it is nice to have those moments again because it does like for as many awful parts as there are about games culture. Like it's nice to be reminded and to go back to that place every once in a while and to like just be someone who's like excited to be surprised about, you know, the thing that you fell in love with so many years ago.
Right. Rob, how about you? Fun? Not fun? What's fun? Rob?
Rob?
Someone text
Sorry.
Rob.
Yo.
Hi.
Hi.
Is E3 fun? Rob?
E3 is fun. I think I'm with Danielle in the Misery Loves Company angle of it as well. Like, I mean, what I don't look forward to is the sheer amount, like, you can't believe how tired your feet and legs get from just, like, standing around. Like, by the end of E3, it really does feel like somebody has beaten the bottoms of your feet with, like a giant meat tenderizer, basically. Like, it hurts. It sucks by the end.
It does. It does. Getting back on that plane home is just, like, nothing left in the tank. Nothing at all left in that tank.
Yeah.
So.
But at the same time, like, I totally am there with you, Austin, where, like, once you are sort of in it and you just have to keep moving forward. And in addition to the, like, it is fun seeing, like, the great surprises are a joy. Hanging out with people you rarely get to see is always fun. I actually really like Los Angeles, so I also just enjoy being in one of what has now become, like, one of my home cities. I enjoy that.
They were agreeing with you,
too.
I think.
But more than that, I think there is sort of a clarity and peacefulness that comes with being that fucking busy. Like, I think that's maybe what you were getting at, Austin. Just this idea of,
yeah,
it's almost this tunnel vision where it's like, oh, you like all those things that you most of your days you're thinking, oh, I should do this, this, and this, and this, and oh, I really need to do this. E3 doesn't give you that luxury of like second guessing yourself or how you're spending your time. It's very simple. What time is your next appointment? How long do you have? Do you need food or water? Do you need to go to the bathroom? Those are your concerns. And for a week, even though it's like physically exhausting, there is kind of a peacefulness that just comes from like not being allowed to get too scattered. You just have to, you know, keep on the moving walkway.
Totally. Which is weird to think about that being fun, but like, you know, we live in the world of media, which means there's lots of chaos. There's lots of, hey, like, is our tech working today? Hey, are we able to sneak this thing in? Or am I going to get called into a meeting? Are you going to get, an edit going to take a little bit longer? Is an interview, subject not going to respond? Like, there's lots of hanging on the seat of your pants for things that change at the last minute. And so to have a week where, like, we know what our schedules look like already, basically. You know, there's some fill in the gaps for, like, when we want to meet up and do a quick chat or whatever. But, but beyond that, it's pretty straightforward. All right, this one comes in from Justin, who says, E3 is a much maligned event for a lot of people for various reasons. What would you change about it?
I mean, what's the malign part? I'm trying to figure out what's,
I think
what's the...
The malign part, I think, for a lot of people, like, we could just jump down to a later question, which is, like, hey, isn't E3 just a big advertisement? Like, isn't that... Or, like, doesn't that get in the way of games sometimes? And I can get that to a degree, for sure. I think it's why so many people spend so much time dunking on shit on Twitter all week, which can be very fun, and I know the snark can get annoying, but also sometimes someone does a fake esports thing on stage, and, like, you can't help but snarking. I think, like, that stuff is maligned. Like, there's a corniness that is maligned, and a, like, often a sort of, like, in the process of trying to pitch to the widest possible audience, there is a feeling that people are being left behind, that you don't always get, like, you don't always get to see who the people are who are making these games. You often get lots of white dudes on stage talking. You often get lots of, like, either very exploitative in the kind of filmic sense, like big explosions and hot bodies and, like, the most kind of, like, mass culture, pop culture, America, you know, shit that is, like, that can really fucking grate, you know, on top of having to see games like Blue Estate or whatever. I think some of that has improved over the last few years. I think we have seen more people of color and more women on stage. The numbers
still
aren't...
The Booth Babes thing, too.
Say again?
the booth babes thing too can be like
totally
annoying for some folks. For
totally,
sure.
You know, some people.
Although
apparently,
it's way different than it used to be.
Yes.
Like, I've been going to E3 since '98, and like the model situation is like radically
it may as well
not exist relative to what it used to be.
It is a space where someone in the military can say, you look good for breeding, and feel like that's an okay place to say that. So I guess maybe that dude probably would say that just about anywhere.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure that's E3 specific, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that dude is saying that all over the place.
But I think that the general commercial, the commercial side of it, right, which is,
but it's a fucking marketing conference that we go to because we get access to games, because that's just the nature of, like, this closed system that we live, like having like more people of color and women on stage, like all that stuff is like we should criticize, we should demand for more. But like at the end of the day, it's a fucking marketing conference, and so like other avenues exist that are a little more personal and intimate, and like can highlight that stuff. But I don't know, like I have trouble getting too up in arms over a lot of like the sort of like presentation of E3 part, because like, that's just what it is. It's always been that way. And, like, the better way is not to demand that E3 gets better. It's, like, to create spaces that actually represent games in ways that, you know, are more in line with what you would like to see. And, I think between, like, IndieCade and PAX and other, you know, PAX has its own problems. But, like, I think there are, like, more places than ever. Like, E3 was a monolith, and that's, like, that's not true anymore. It's a monolith for the announcement of big games, because E3 was created as a way to get attention on cable channels and to get news attention when video games didn't demand the same sort of attention that they used to. And like, that's basically like what now E3 still exists as. It's just a way to get a bunch of headlines to collectively. Now there are lots of other spaces for games to be celebrated in ways that E3 is never going to do.
I mean, I definitely get that sort of like, this is the thing it is perspective, but to push back a little bit, one, I think we're seeing E3 in flux. We know that E3 is going to continue to change over the next few years as it becomes a more public-focused event. And so I think it's important to think about how to make sure that those changes are changes that we would like to see, because if they're going back to the drawing board to some degree anyway, why not try to address some of the shit, right? And so for me, one of the things that I think is an improvement is I look at the list of the talks happening at the E3 Coliseum, and there's shit here that I wish I had the time to go see. I don't, because it's not how the conference is set up. I have to go see, you know, I have appointments and stuff. But, you know, having a talk from the PUBG team, explaining how they build a map, having a talk about accessibility in gaming. Like, there are lots of really interesting conversations that are going to happen on this on that stage, you know, and there's going to be lots of stuff that is just like, here is an Assassin's Creed behind the scenes also. I definitely get that. But like, having that space for people who make games and care about games to talk about, you know, immersive storytelling and to pitch their games in a less trailer focused way, for me, is a really useful thing. And obviously, to some degree, some of these are things that would have been press-focused things before, right? Like, some of these are just going to be versions of behind-closed-doors events. Like, the Rage 2 presentation on Tuesday as part of the E3 Coliseum is probably going to look a lot like what that presentation looks like for people behind closed doors looking at Rage 2, or on the GameSpot stage, or the IGN stage, or whatever. But, you know, things like the music of Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle, where Grant Kirkhope is going to get on stage and explain, talk about the developing that sort of music, is celebrating a part of gaming and digging into a part of gaming that that would not have ever gotten. Thank you. See, they love horns out there.
They're really into it.
That would not have gotten attention in the past at an event like E3. And so that is a step in the right direction for me. And it's a way for E3 to continue to try to get to be more comprehensive. If it's going to be a celebration of gaming, it's going to be a much broader one. And I think there's probably also something to say here about the labor stuff, right? It's never going to be a place where, I don't know. We did get a great question in from Dan, who was like, will there be an E3? Dan Joseph over on Twitter said, will we have E3 under socialism? If not, what type of terrible funeral should we have for it? Personally, I am in favor of floating E3 into the ocean, sinking it to become an artificial reef, accompanied by a funeral dirge made up of combined Halo, Call of Duty, and Final Fantasy leitmotifs. That's it right there. Thank you, construction workers.
They're voting yes.
Good.
Agreed.
They're into
agreed.
It.
Agreed. But no, but I think there will always be space for exhibitions, right? For like, hey, here are the cool things we're working on. Here are the things that we want attention for. Like, there will continue to be a different type of economy of attention, no matter what way our politics changes. And if the fucking Ontario elections last night said anything, it will continue to go bad before they get good.
Also, remember that E3 is run by the ESA. Yes, the ESA is a lobbying group that is, like, historically deeply conservative. The video game industry projects as liberal and progressive, but then the policies they actually adopt are, like, you know, I'm going to get mine.
Yep.
And like the ESA has aligned themselves with the Trump administration like multiple times. And like the ESA runs E3. And so that's like, you're right. Like there are ways it can get better and be like more interesting and more celebratory of like games and games culture. And, but also at the end of the day, like it's toxic, like at a certain root
right. That
like my expectations are just incredibly low. So like, yes, like my cynicism like can probably be blunted a little bit. And like, there can always be like, you know, progress made, but also like it's run by the ESA and like that's not going to change.
Right. Here's one. I would love to see more people who are able to run different types of events around E3 week continue to figure out how to do that. Like Microsoft isn't in the building anymore. Devolver is across the street.
Mixer is in the building.
Right, Mixer isn't. Sorry, Microsoft is by way of Mixer, but all the Microsoft stuff is like across the street, just like Devolver is now. And I don't know necessarily like that's as convenient as it could be for us, but also I'm in a very fuck the ESA mode, and think that there is room for those spaces to feel different. Obviously, EA is like across town this year. They're not even next door where they were last year or the year before. And so like for those big companies, like there is some degree of value of being like, all right, let me just go and deal with their stuff over here. And then I don't have to like walk through a billion people to go to my next appointment. I'd so much rather just be outside. It's LA. It's pretty. It's good weather most of the time. I'm in New York where like it only gets hot and muggy. It doesn't get to be that. There isn't like that kind of dry heat. And I like that. So get me outside more often, E3.
Give me some dry heat.
Here's an easy one. Patrick wants to know. Is this you, Patrick?
Yeah, please.
How is Waypoint?
What do I want to know?
How is Waypoint covering E3 this year?
Great question.
Good question. Podcasts, basically,
yeah,
right?
Basically, yep. Yeah.
That's
like. I mean, there may be editorial if somehow we feel the desire or the fever to put something out, but I think our expectations are basically to do podcasts for the week, and then we'll follow that up with, you know, thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers after E3.
The week after, or the weeks after, I guess.
Yep. So you should expect some podcasts on the evenings of the major press conferences starting, is tomorrow EA? Tomorrow is EA, right?
Yeah.
Tomorrow is EA.
So starting tomorrow.
Wait, so
I'm
getting off a plane and we're podcasting?
Uh-huh. It's E3, baby. We in it.
Okay, that sounds legit.
And then
are we streaming these podcasts?
We're going to see what we can do. We're going to see what how the
We're
internet is
see,
and the Airbnb.
Yeah.
And if so, probably on Periscope. That's the kind of light lift version of this. We didn't bring out a whole video team. We decided this year to bring out the entire like core Waypoint team instead of trying to figure out how to like pay for video producers and stuff beyond our own video producers like Natalie and Danielle. See? Big fans again.
Yep, see? They love
thank
us.
Thank you. I love this production, this construction crew loves us. Yeah, so it's going to be the whole Waypoint crew. Everyone will be there. And so we'll be doing podcasts. And then probably some social video, you know. I think Danica and Natalie are going to be roaming with an iPhone stabilizer and maybe a boom mic to kind of be able to like stream us talking to each other and stuff around the E3 show floor and outside and blah, blah, blah. So just follow us on socials, twitter.com/waypoint and just like look, you know, subscribe, stay subscribed to this feed where you will find a billion podcasts over the next week. I don't think there's any other ways. We're also going to be over at the Giant Bomb, seeing the Giant Bomb folks, I think on Wednesday night. So look forward to that.
I'll briefly be on Kinda Funny's like GameSpot stage on Thursday afternoon, like 3-ish. I don't know. I'll tweet out when I'm supposed to be on there, but I'll be stopping by for like 10-15 minutes.
Cool. Any other people making any appearances on anything this coming week? Okay.
I don't think so.
So yeah, I think that's the basics of what it looks like. And then, as always, follow us all on Twitter, because you'll see us tweeting, again, snarkily or not, here or there. This one comes in from username, let's see here. Now that's what I call John Hurt, volume 323, who says, what are your favorite types of minor announcements at E3? The kind that don't or won't make a splash, but were really cool to see when time is taken for them. So favorite minor...
The kinds of games I like tend to be those kinds of minor announcements that nobody else gets excited for.
Examples besides Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze?
Yeah, let's see. I got very, very excited about, God, sorry. I had something totally in my mind, and then it just like E3, it just ran me over.
One of my favorite parts of E3, and this still exists even as like the amount of games that are shown at E3 has shrunk, is like the press conferences highlight like the really big stuff. Occasionally you'll get like Microsoft, you know, showing off like a Below or Ori and the Blind Forest. Like they'll do like nods to some of the smaller stuff or more independent work, but that stuff is usually on the show floor. It's just like tucked away in kiosks. And so like I really enjoy like carving out time in my schedule where it's just like, all right, I'm just going to go like walk around like Microsoft and Sony and Nintendo, like they often have like seas of booths,
right?
Where these games didn't get any time other than like maybe a bullet point mentioned in a press release. But they're there and you can go play them. And so I really enjoy like that time spent like finding that game that like wasn't like the big pitch, but was actually something that you ended up like kind of like falling for. Like I know a couple. Was it maybe 2 years ago, like Gravity Rush 2 was like one of those games where like that game didn't get any play at Sony's press conference. And I went and I just stumbled upon it while walking through their booth on the way to something else and was just like captivated by the way it looked and played. And it was just like one of those games that I was trying telling people like, hey, like if you get time, like at least go look at it for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And so like that part still happens at E3. And I enjoy trying in the same way of PAX, like trying to find like that one game that I can, when people ask, like, what'd you see? It's like, well, you can't go book an Assassin's Creed appointment, but like, here's a thing that like you could go to a booth and go play and that I can point people towards that maybe didn't get the same sort of labored attention.
Totally. Rob, what about you? What's your favorite type of minor E3 announcement?
It's a tough thing for me to come up with examples because literally the nature of a minor announcement is it tends not to stick in the mind.
Right.
I think for me, I tend to, I genuinely like hearing about little expansions that are coming along to games that maybe didn't get a huge amount of attention, but, like, are continuing to be supported, right? Like, stuff like that I tend to enjoy. But yeah, mostly I enjoy when passionate communities are being served, even when they aren't necessarily the biggest.
Sure.
Sorry, totally. In a positive sense, not in a toxic, screaming fandom, sense. There's an important distinction. There's an important distinction there.
Yeah.
100%. All right, very important one next. This is a big one here. Which game is from Bryant? Which game series should team up with the Rabbids next?
Oh boy.
Nintendo Direct Rainbow Six plus Rabbids.
Wow.
So it goes from like a tactics game to a tactical shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is it Rainbow Six Siege plus Rabbids or a different Rainbow Six?
No, okay. 100% it's Siege. I suppose you could make like a Door Kickers type game with Rabbids, but
you could.
I think I would like that might be good.
That might be good. I mean that might be good. So might Rainbow Six Siege with Rabbids, where it's just like the badass music is playing in slow motion. There's like bullet shells falling to the ground or casings falling to the ground. The like you see like the shield, like the siege shield or whatever, the riot shield, and it zooms up and it's like the person just like is built and like brolic and just like ready to go and covered in all the tactical black shit, and then it just like reveals Rabbid face and he's like or whatever the sound rabbits make is, which I think is and like it was wacky, and then suddenly like pulls out a gun and it has like a, you know, whatever, like a boxing glove on the front, and they that one can shoot a boxing glove. That's the special move it has. It can shoot a boxing glove that stuns you or something, I guess. It's like a multi-use flashbang, but you have to shoot someone with it. It has to recharge. Anyway.
Like the whole, like surprise of that game was not that it was good. Well, because it was good,
that was the surprise.
In a genre that, you know, the mashup that was unexpected. I'm trying to think like what the equivalent, like, I mean, strategy game, like turn-based XCOM-y strategy game, like is pretty far out there already. Yeah. Like I'm trying to think like what's even deeper than that that would make me go, all right, like, you pulled it off last time, like, I guess I can't doubt you a second time. I'm trying to think, like, where, like what's, like, the equivalent?
Life is Rabbids.
Oh, my God.
It's the new Life is Strange game.
Oh, my God.
Life is Rabbids.
Right. Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think some sort of, like, interactive adventure game touching on, like, teenage drama. Life and love and loss.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah,
the rabbits
are strange. Yeah,
the rabbits within. Yeah, that's true. Sometimes you got to think about. Sometimes life makes. Doesn't life sometimes make you feel a little rabid? Question mark. See, because they're rabbits, but they're also
Don't Nod is making like 8 games right now, so maybe they can actually work on this.
They announced another game today.
If Don't Nod and Ubisoft want to make a collaboration on like some sort of adventure game starring rabbits, fuck it, man.
Let's go.
I'm in.
Very good.
They're about to launch another expansion for that Rabbids game with Donkey Kong. So
right, that looks good.
Hell yeah!
Yeah, it looks. Yeah, it's supposed to be not supposed to. I mean, everything else has been good. So
right,
I won't be shocked.
Another good question here from Mike. It is a different Mike. This might be better left for after the conference. But how would you categorize each of the main presentations on the McDonald's scale?
Oh boy!
All right, what's the McDonald's scale?
Uh huh.
Oh, you know.
I think it's the thing that we use sometimes, I think.
Okay.
Which is, like, just the fries up to, like, cheeseburger deluxe, I guess.
Oh, no. This
you're saying the McDonald's chart.
Yeah, this is that's black coffee.
That's
this
not a
is
scale.
Single black coffee.
Okay.
Well,
yeah,
I get it now,
scale, though. Yeah, I see.
It's not a scale.
I think that might be what the question
is. I understand, but I think that's what they mean, because we've talked about it so many times on streams. Yeah.
That is what they mean.
Yeah.
All right, so then I think it's... Microsoft is we have food at home. And food is third-party games.
Oh!
Right? Because that's what we're going to see. That's my understanding. We're going to see a lot of third-party games.
See a lot of... I mean, there'll be first-party games, but...
Crackdown's delayed. We know that Crackdown 3 delayed to 2019.
I know more about what Sony's going to show than what Microsoft's going to show. And so there is room for them to surprise me. Like, folks I have talked to that, like, usually have a pretty good understanding of, like... the first party showcases. Mm-hmm. There's a big kind of question mark over Microsoft's. Like the prediction I was making with a source of mine was as we were kind of like trying to think through some of the stuff that he knew and what I had heard was will Microsoft adopt the position that Sony has done in the past, which is to be like very forward pitching. Like, so Sony, the way they have done their press conferences for a number of years, they've pulled back from this a lot, like in the last 2 years specifically. They would show games, trailers for games that like, yo, that's not coming out for like 4 fucking years. Yeah. Like that game is not anywhere close. That is just a trailer for a game that is in like pre-production. But like they would do that, they would get a lot of credit for like, oh my God, the hype. Like, because they were showing things that like weren't anywhere near like a shipping state.
Right.
And Microsoft is traditionally, to their credit, like not engaged with that stuff as much, largely because they don't have the games to show for it. You know, like a Halo game is not necessarily going to like, there's no reason to show a Halo game 3 years in advance because that's not going to do anything for anyone. But like, if you like between what like Phil Spencer has said and what Microsoft has been talking about, like they have made the insinuation that they are putting a lot of investment in like big projects and acquisitions that the kinds of things people like, that's what Phil Spencer was telling me last year when I talked with him, was like the kind of stuff people are looking for, we're doing it and it just takes time. And I wonder if this year they might choose to like show a little bit of that stuff, a little bit of like Sony, like, hey, this game is coming in, like it'll say 2019, but like, yo, that game is actually probably 2020.
Right.
And try and get people excited in a way that they haven't in the past. Like, you'll still get your Halos and your Gears of Wars and the Call of Duty demo and the Destiny demo and whatever will all be at Microsoft.
Wait, well, I thought Call of Duty is now PS4, isn't it?
I guess, but you know what I mean. Yeah, the big sort of, like, third-party stuff, like, will end up there. And I guess Destiny would probably also be at Sony because they have that partnership.
Yeah.
But, like, all I'm saying is, like, you'll get your checkbox third-party games that is going to be on everything. So, like, what's the point of it being at Xbox?
Right.
And I think that maybe, like, would I be shocked if you saw, like, a teaser for a Fable game? Like, no.
No, yeah,
like,
I think that'll be there.
I don't think that's enough, man. Like, awesome. No. Like, you need a shock. So, like, hey.
FromSoft.
Not to go back to the well, but if, like, if Shadows Die Twice turned out to be an Xbox exclusive in the way that Bloodborne was a PlayStation exclusive, like, that's the kind of game that would make people, like, sit up in their seat.
Right. I actually think I just cracked Shadows Die Twice. I think.
Okay. Yeah?
So it's Shadows Die Twice.
Yeah.
The second S in Shadows slides over to be after the word dies, and it says Shadow Dies Twice, and it's a Shadow the Hedgehog sequel.
Yes!
So they already did, they gave Shadow a gun, but now they're going to really reimagine.
Horror action Shadows.
Shadow the Hedgehog body horror? Sure. Yeah, it's out there.
Let me tell you. So, okay. So, Microsoft, we have food at home. Where's Square Enix's McDonald's? Yeah. I played near. Right? Has to be that.
It might be one of the only ones that I think is genuinely McDonald's. Because, like, I think everyone thinks they're McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them are actually, we have food at home in a very, like, look, you kind of expected this. Here you go. And a few of them are, without really fully being cognizant of it, very black coffee.
Yeah, that's true. Nintendo might be black coffee.
Yes, I was like,
oh boy.
I think so.
Which isn't a bad thing. They just know what they're doing. There's going to be a 45-minute Nintendo Direct. We're probably going to see, Smash? Maybe something about Metroid? I mean, we saw that leak, that we saw that kiosk leak, mm-hmm. right?
There'll be a bunch of, third-party, indie game partnerships that they're doing.
Which is super interesting to me.
I think this year we have food at home, though. Because,
you think so?
They're kind of on top. Mm.
Yeah,
and
fair.
And Smash is, like, just the safest fucking choice. I mean, that series doesn't do anything for me, but just, like, fighting games don't do anything for me. But, like, there's a new Smash, because, like, of course, and there's Pokemon, right? Like, the Pokemon game that's, like, a remake of Pokemon Yellow, but with some Pokemon Go mechanics. Like,
yeah, but people hate that. That fandom hated that.
They're still going to buy it.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry.
You're not wrong.
And they've already promised that they're making the real game next year. Yes. So, like, they're serving both audiences. If that's, like, the... And they'll be the Star Fox game, right? Probably. Like,
what is that? Is that a Star Fox...
They've said, like...
It's a racing game.
I hope it's not like Mario Kart's fine, but it would bum me out if all that thing is just like Star Fox racing. Like, I hope there's a little more meat on those bones than just Star Fox.
All right,
but racing. If it's Diddy Kong Racing style, which had like adventure elements and all sorts of other stuff, that would be rad as hell.
And what if it also had the Star Fox style like branching pathway map thing, and you're doing like adventure-y shit on each planet? Along with your racing, I'm here for it. Related,
that'd be cool.
Very briefly, I played the Sonic Team Racing thing that I can now talk about that was announced this week. It's called Team Sonic Racing. The follow-up from, is that Sumo Digital? Yeah, Sumo Digital to their ongoing, or their previous series, which was Sonic and All-Stars Racing and Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed. It is a like team-based racing game. Which is to say, it's funny because when I say that, I think a lot of people think like, oh, that means you can switch characters on the fly. And no, it's like a team-based racing game where you're scored at the end of a race based on the placing of your entire team of racers. It's you and two other characters. So it's like Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles, Shadow, Rouge, and the robot, ED Omega or whatever, ED 2001.
102.
I think this was like an Omega or a... Or alpha, I don't fucking remember. In any case.
He's an alpha and an omega.
Alpha and an omega. Gamma, gamma, gamma. I think it's gamma. In any case, it's cool. There's lots of, like, drifting. You can, toss power-ups between you. So if like, you have the, if you have the equivalent of the blue shell or whatever, you can toss, but you're in the lead, you can toss it to another person on your team, which is neat. You know, you toss it, like, back in the ranks to another player. That's neat. Anyway, that's my Sonic update.
I'm interested.
But yeah, I definitely think
I love those games, so of totally. Course I'm interested.
I agree with you. I think Nintendo, that's a good analysis. We have food at home for Nintendo. Sony feels black coffee to me because they've said what's going to be on that stage and we have a pretty good idea of what's going to be on that stage, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't get okay, you know, I don't want to over promise, but I wouldn't get excited for like some major surprise. I think Sony's actually going to walk out, show what they've said they're going to show, and like that's going
which
to be...
Which is Ghost of Tsushima, Spider-Man... Yep.
Death Stranding.
Death Stranding, right.
Oh, yeah.
And Last of Us 2.
Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Which, like, we have seen, like, we you know, Spider-Man is the one we know the most about. We've seen actual gameplay of that, but, mm-hmm. like, those are three games, like, I have no idea what the fuck that Ghost game is.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm sure in my head I can imagine, like, a pitch of it, but, like, you know, we know what The Last of Us is, but, like, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the game was, like, an interesting departure. I don't know. But, like, those are all, like, fucking Kojima game. Like, that's a great lineup. Like, if Microsoft would kill to show four games, there were just those four games.
Oh, especially four first-person games, right? First-party games.
First-party, yes.
They're all first-person games. By the way, I'm leaking it right here. Spider-Man first-person. Here we go.
In some ways, like they maybe very directly, they are underscoring their biggest advantage they continue to have over Microsoft. Like Microsoft has more or less like fixed the hardware problem.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're back on parity there. That is not a continued problem for them. But like it takes,
yeah.
I mean, it takes a long time to build a first party bench,
yep.
right? Like, you know, I mean, like games like Scalebound, like I wanted to see that. Maybe that game needed to be canceled, right? Like maybe, you know, and they just showed it too early. But like they remain, even if Microsoft put in the work, that's something that shows up 3, 4, 5, 10 years, right? Like that's not something that happens overnight. And Sony has like whatever you think of their games, right? Like Detroit, like a game that should be dragged, like but that is like the big splashy story driven first party game like a lot of people want.
Yeah.
And Microsoft has like none of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the rest of these are more easily placed, honestly. Devolver is actually going to be McDonald's, McDonald's, McDonald's. There's no doubt about it. There's no question. EA again is, I think, black coffee in the sense of like it's Anthem, it's Battlefield, and that's it. It's I don't know, rumors of some indie, like another EA indie type thing, right? And then. That's
I guess if
it.
Anthem looks even if Anthem looks really really good, I don't know if that elevates it out of its
no.
And I don't because that would just
yeah.
that would just be sort of like a celebrated return to form for BioWare
yep.
as opposed to like a giant surprise because like we know BioWare is capable of doing really good stuff and so but yeah like they would need a TIE Fighter-ish sort of like
yes
big
oh surprise
shit
yeah.
moment to and. Like, it'd be the right time to do something like that with Star Wars to wash the taste of Battlefront out of everyone's mouth, especially given that whatever EA Motive is building is, you know, years away.
I have no idea what to expect from Ubisoft this year because it's the first year that they haven't been under threat of takeover from Vivendi in a little while. And those last few years have felt like...
EA's Game On is just going to come out on stage with a beer and just like, oh, guys, I'm just... Whew, really dodged a bullet there, didn't we?
I am very thankful that you love the Rabbids.
Oh.
And also the Assassins. So
who
yeah,
wants to share this scotch with me?
To you, everyone.
Anyway, here is the Wonderwall.
So cute.
All right, so yeah.
Because if they show Beyond Good and Evil, that'll be pretty expected to see an
yep.
update on that. Assassin's Creed... but you know, I hope the game's good. I wish they were giving it a longer break, but whatever.
Yeah, me too.
Splinter Cell will probably be there. I guess it's curious, like, if you start thinking about mapping out, like, their their lineup, it's like it probably doesn't make sense for Watch Dogs to be there, even though it would be like
it would be
time for them to show it.
It would
but
be
it's like,
so dope if they were like, we have Watch Dogs 3 coming out this year and we haven't told anybody and it didn't leak. That's not going to happen. I don't believe it's going
to
happen.
They're not going to ship Assassin's Creed and Watch Dogs back to back, given that Division 2 is also going to be likely shipping before the end of the fiscal year, so by end of next March. That's a lot, but I don't know. But I guess if they wanted to show Watch Dogs, it's like, hey, this is our... It wouldn't be in their wheelhouse to show like a game that's coming out like next May, because that's probably when that game is coming.
I guess.
But they seem to show all their stuff. They don't like do separate events.
No.
They don't do like cover reveals.
No.
So if they're going to show... If Watch Dogs is shipping next year before next E3, I guess they would show it this year. So
I would be really happy to see that again. You know, I that's a game that I had some issues with at launch, but genuinely really liked a lot. And would,
it's a game set up so deeply for a sequel.
Yes, 100%. The way that game ends feels like ready to do some shit, and so I'd be here for it.
And even just like the design wise, it just seemed like it was the kind of thing that you there are those games you look at and go, oh, like there. It's easy to see where they take a big leap with the next one, and that is easier to do with a sequel than in, you know, with expansions.
Yeah. Bethesda, besides Prey DLC, which I hope is cool. Like, I'm curious about their moon base. Is what I will play this DLC because I'm curious to see what they do on the moon, because it's the moon.
They got to do cool gravity stuff. I mean, that game had really cool zero-G stuff and regular gravity stuff. But so, like, what about 1/6 gravity?
Exactly.
That's a cool idea, right?
I bet they could come up with some really cool gadgets and shit to work in that space in 1/6 gravity versus just zero-G. What else do you want from that Prey, from that, like, is there a narrative space in Prey, Danielle, that you think the DLC could address?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to know a little bit more about the world itself, a little bit more about Transtar Corporation, the sort of, you know, fucked up corporation, or the backstory. I could see this absolutely being very backstory heavy in terms of the sort of 60s space race stuff that happened in the sort of alt history of this world. I could imagine seeing some, like, cool Russian space stations or Russian slash American, you know, joint efforts, because that's sort of the backstory of the game, but it doesn't go super deep in that stuff. So I feel like that could be extremely cool. Some Cold War on the moon stuff.
Are you happy if they don't address like the way Prey ends? Like if this is the last we get of Prey, are you happy with like the cliffhanger just being how Prey like leaves its world? Or are you hopeful that somehow they, like, even if this in a prequel direction, they somehow manage to address, like, where Prey leaves, like, the world and the consequences of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually really okay with the way Prey ends. I actually think it's, like, kind of interesting and at least speaks to the stakes that make sense in terms of the ending of that game. So I'm fine either way. Honestly, the thing, I really love the world and I really love the characters in Prey quite a bit, but I also loved how much it was a really awesome toy box for me to play with sort of immersive sim system. So... I'm honestly good either way. I just want this to be as much as possible. This is one of those few things where, you know, normally I'm like, oh man, I want games to be shorter. But Prey was great for me, at least, because it didn't have to be super long, but I chose for it to be a very long experience for me because I had so much fun playing with all those possibilities.
It was long even if you didn't do that.
I guess that's true. Yeah, that's true.
That was like a 25-hour game even if you played it straight.
Right.
Yeah. Or an 80-hour game if you played it like me. So, yeah.
Here's a question. So there have been rumors that there was an earlier version of that game or maybe just in the design doc or, you know, I don't know when direction changed here, but where a lot of the NPCs who are dead in that game were supposed to be alive, that there was a version of that game in someone's imagination, in the dev team's imagination, where, you know, the mimics and the aliens are cohabitating with an active, open, like, living station compared to the kind of more Bioshock, everything's already gone wrong thing. Is that something you'd like to see in the Moon DLC?
Yeah, I think that would be rad, especially if it kind of takes place in the 60s, or not necessarily even the 60s, but sort of in that alt, you know, that alt history or as a prequel, like, you know, if this is story-wise a prequel. I mean, there were sections of Prey where there were people alive, it was mostly relegated to, like, the cargo bay.
Yeah, that's that cargo bay stuff where you, like, work with the people to, like, fight off that one incoming invasion or whatever, right?
I'd love to see a thing direction from that where it's like, because a thing that I think about a lot is Prey opens so fucking strongly, but I love that moment where the sort of the doctor who's giving you the exam at the start of the game, realizes that something just fucked up. And he finally just turns to someone and is like, what the hell is going on? And then he yep. says, like, somebody give me a coffee. And then all hell breaks loose. And I want a game that is basically that moment. What the hell is going on? And then something completely innocuous blows the fuck up in your face. Like,
right.
That's the, I would 100% like adore a Prey game like that.
Yeah, I want that pacing in games in general. I saw Hereditary last night. I know, Patrick, you did too. But that's a movie with that sort of like fantastic, very like it lets you know some shit is going to happen. And then there's a build and that build keeps going and going. And then it gets there. It gets to like horror movie extremes, but it takes its time and it is kind of dryly funny and very tense. And like, I would love for a Prey game to have that sort of slow building tension. Like, we know there are aliens here, but don't show us any of the designs for the first 4 hours, you know?
Or just live more in the moment before or the moment like leading up to. Like, it's so much. So many stories jump in to like, yeah, oh, the outbreak has happened, or the terrible like, you know, event that has escalated everything is occurred, or happens in the intro cutscene, or happens in the first like 10 minutes. And I think there's a way that you could do something with Prey that like allows it to like kind of live on the edges a little bit, where like, you know, it's before everything has taken a dark turn, and that would be a lot of. It just to have more alive characters, more people to interact with. Like, often in these spaces, you're dealing with a, you know, a dead, decrepit, you know, space station or whatever the environment is, where everyone's gone, because it's easier to rationalize, you know, how you're going around shooting everything up or however you're interacting with the world. And it'd be interesting to see them kind of pull that back, because it's fun to live in that and interesting to live in that moment before everything takes that turn.
It's such a bummer to me that we don't get. So I can think of in this kind of broad immersive sim space, I'll have to turn this into another immersive sim episode of Waypoint Radio, but we get the everything has gone wrong and now you're there thing, right? And then I'd say like in a game like Hitman, the 2016 Hitman, or the upcoming Hitman 2, hopefully, we get the like everything exists and then you're there to throw the wrench into it. Right? And I love both of those. I would love to get the one which is like the wrench is being tossed. Or the version of it where, like, yes, you throw a wrench, and then you have to stick around, right? So, like,
you're the one that knows the wrench is, like, you see it mid-flight,
yes.
And, like, nobody else does.
Yes.
And, like, you get to be that character who's, like, waving their hands, you know, like, shit's bad! Why does no one think this is going wrong?
Right, exactly. And also the person was like, all right, I'm going to do something about it, but then you also have to live with the consequences of whatever you've done with it. I guess Deus Ex gets there a little bit. Deus Ex is maybe the one that does feel the most, like, okay, I've done this thing, and the world is going to continue on because it's not a post-apocalyptic or like a, you know, a deserted underwater base or a deserted space station. It is just the world. So I think maybe that's – I wish that second Deus Ex sequel was better. Which one do I mean? Up to you. in any case.
Oof.
Patterns. Yeah. Yeah. Turns out there was a pattern. I guess the last thing on these like general E3 conferences, or you know, one more thing on Bethesda, which is we even talked 76, Fallout 76. I just want to say on this podcast that I'm bemused and frustrated with the way that's being pitched based on the reporting around it and based on some stuff I'd heard. That game is being pitched like it's a big Fallout game, like it's a mainline Fallout game, like it's a open world first person single player RPG. It might be first person, to be clear, but as Jason Schreier reported over on Kotaku, like all of his reporting and all the stuff that I've heard from various sources is that it is a multiplayer survival game. His story talks about it in connection to games like Rust or Ark. I've definitely heard it called a co-op survival game, from some sources. And so that is a little more appealing to me, but it's just like 2 weeks of letting your fan base who really loves Fallout the way it's been think that maybe they might be getting another one of those just doesn't feel like a good strategy to me. Like,
I mean, the hope is that maybe they're like, while the reporting has, like, focused on this one element of it, maybe there is, because Jason has reported out that, you know, Bethesda Game Studio, like, it's being
co-developed,
it would be very strange for them to say this is a Bethesda Game Studios production. Like, there is a lot of weight behind putting that logo, that name behind it. It would have been a lot easier for them to say, hey, Bethesda Austin. Montreal, it's or, you know, whatever.
So Austin. It is, right. Bethesda. Like, the thing Bethesda, is, it is
and
that,
they are working on it. Yes. But they put this logo. Yeah. They said this is the next Bethesda Game Studios game. And so they're, like, there is a calculated weight. And Bethesda is, like, they're you know, a smart company. Like, they're pretty, especially pretty savvy about social media and how they pitch their games to an audience. My hope is that there is more, like, no, is it Fallout 5? Like, no, it's not. But, like, is there more of, like, what you would want out of a that kind of game here more than has been reported out, a surprising amount more?
Yes.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And so, because I think it would be very strange for them to put their logo on there, even if they're working on it. Like, but, like, by putting their logo on it, they make a specific type of game.
Yeah.
And
And he's been out there, Todd Howard has been out there saying we're going to make some new types of games in the past. But you will see. We'll see.
Right. I hope. That would be one of my surprises from E3 is actually, like, as someone that, I'll say despised the building parts of Fallout 4 because it is just, like, so far from what I want from those games. And the fact that the other parts of the game I found to be profoundly disappointing. Like, it does not make me feel great that, like, the follow-up, in a sense, or the next one is like, whoa, we're going to double down on, like, building shit. And I'm like, oh, that just makes me kind of, but if it's building shit in like the building stuff in Fallout 4,
that
was not
the biggest
in service.
Problem. Yeah.
Well, no, so it was not in service of anything except, like, if you wanted to be creative and just build something.
Which I like doing, but even I was like, I wish there was a reason for me to grow crops.
Right.
I wish there was a reason to build this cool bar or this basketball court I built. I wish this did something. And there have been some really good mods that have figured out some stuff to do around that, that I've been, again, looking at YouTube videos for the last week on and off and haven't actually installed and played yet. But when I get back, that's one of my fun projects. I'm going to fucking mod Fallout 4 into a game that I want to play again.
Like, I've heard people, one of the big praises they give for a game like Dragon Quest Builders is, like, that it was a game that a lot of people were waiting for. Was like, I find Minecraft intellectually interesting,
right?
But I don't want to sit there with the blocks and have. I want something to do. I want to be instructed. And Dragon Quest Builders, like, is a game that does that. It takes Minecraft elements and then, like, drops that on top of, like, a bunch of RPG stuff. And I've heard that game is really great for scratching that itch. So. I guess that's what I'm hoping for Fallout 76 is it's more, it's like, it takes that part that I didn't like of Fallout 4 because it felt directionless and maybe put some direction behind it that makes it a little more palatable to someone like
Yeah, that'd be
myself.
Good. I really like survival games. I'm that person. I like more of the single player or co-op variety, things like 7 Days to Die, Minecraft, stuff like that. I've had a lot of fun with over the years. Less so than Ark or Rust, which are like these like, or DayZ even that have these kind of like, heavy competitive versions. I'd way rather play a PUBG or a Battle Royale game in some way to tap that itch. So I hope it is more co-op. I would love it something that is like the Fallout take on like the big budget version of Fallout Shelter meets State of Decay, but you're building out a base, you're building out a vault, whatever you're building that has like NPCs that have needs and quests and, you know, that you're recruiting and managing, something like that. Real quick, speaking of multiplayer stuff, I am also curious about No Man's Sky Next, which will probably be at Microsoft, since that's where that is coming. I mean, I guess Next is coming to everything, but they announced Next via a Microsoft live stream. And so I think we'll see that, and I know that'll be multiplayer, but I'm very curious about what else it will be. They've done a lot of good work supporting No Man's Sky since its launch. I think that the single player stuff that they added has been really good, whether that's the foundation, like base building stuff there or the narrative stuff that got added last year. And I'm very curious to see if this is just, hey, you and your friend can have a base and fly around together, or if there is like a bigger picture, you know, pitch to that, because even just, hey, you and your friends can fly around together is a big lift for a team of that size. But if it is also, and here is some sort of new system that helps you like group up and have guilds and manage planets, and here is a version of it where you're able to like, collaborate with your resources and own a freighter together and become, you know, we've redone the economy so you can be like, if it goes in the EVE Online direction, or if it goes a completely different direction that I can't even think of, I'd be happy. So I'm very curious to see what that actually looks like. All right, I think this is it. This is our last question. Philip, last chance, he says, what is your wildest guess about the new FromSoft game?
God damn it. I think I already gave mine.
What was your wildest? Oh, yeah, I guess we did. I guess our wildest guess is Shadow 2 or Silent Hills. My real guess is something like Kuon. I think that is the best thing out there right now.
Kuon or I wouldn't be surprised if it like was basically pulling from Kuon and Tenchu would be like
ninja, like Japanese ninja body horror.
The problem, like, yes, I'd play that game. The problem is, like, there was also already just, like, one of those.
Neo?
What was that fucking, Neo, which, like, I didn't play it. Once I found out the game takes, like, 90 hours to finish, I was like, okay, sorry. Like, I just don't have time for that.
Yeah.
But it was a really good game. I liked, like, the 10 hours or so I played. And I'd like to play From Software spin on that. But I really hope it is something, like, as much as I just want them to make, like, a Bloodborne 2, and I really wish they would make a Bloodborne 2, I think there was a lot left to mine from that. I think, like, two games in, like, their spinoffs, like, I think it's, like, the right amount. Dark Souls 3 was good, but, like, that game didn't need to be made, I would say. But I'd love, like, a Tenchu sort of, like, ninja focus, something, like, fundamentally sort of changed, like, your approach to play. It's, like, I like the Dark Souls DNA, but I just want them to keep pushing the combat and, like, the way you interact with the world in, like, different directions that, like, allow you to take advantage of, like, the foundational knowledge you have. But, like, whereas Bloodborne forced you to be on offense instead of defense, I want something that, like, does a similar push for your habits.
Right, in some direction.
Daniel, what about you? You've played these games, even though Austin and I are the obsessives. Like, what do you come from it looking for?
Yeah, I mean, a similar case with Bloodborne 2. I just really liked the combat so much better in that game, and I liked those horror elements so much, especially towards the end of the game. It just got so wild. It was so much fun to see that. I don't know how they would top it. I mean, I'm sure they would figure that out, of course. I trust them to do that. But I'm also interested in sort of new thematic stuff as well. Like, Bloodborne was so much fun and so interesting, partially because of the more aggressive combat, but also because it was a different type of setting. The sort of, like, fantasy setting isn't really my bag. Like, I enjoy it on some levels, certainly, but...
No, I'm with you. I, like, you know, generally don't all care of us for fantasy
are.
Stuff.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think this is not a big fan. Rob, are you a big fantasy? Are you a big fantasy guy?
Are you a fan of big fantasy?
Fantasy
big
man? Fantasy.
I love fantasy.
Oh, there it is.
Oh, you can tell he's telling the truth.
In the tank for big fantasy.
Yeah, I think that's a good. I'm with you completely, Danielle. Which is, like, anything new would be really cool. That teaser was so up in the air. Like, obviously, some sort of fantasy East Asian script or something. So I think a lot of people definitely feel like it's going in that direction. I would love for them.
Seemed a little more body horror-y than even with what they've explored in the past.
Yeah. Like,
the number of their enemies and boss designs have played with body horror.
Yes.
But, like, the way that trailer was framed seemed to push even further in the direction of more explicit horror elements, which obviously I'm rooting for. So.
Yeah, of course you are. I've been watching people play through Demon's Souls recently, and that game's good. I want a Demon's Souls remaster so bad, and we're not going to get one.
You know, we
soon.
Might get. There's the folks that did Shadows of the Colossus said that, or Shadow of the Colossus said they're doing another remake of something that's, like, very ambitious.
Interesting.
It'd probably be too soon for them to announce that E3.
Yeah,
but Sony owns Demon's Souls.
They do.
Like. I do think, like, that is a game that is so, especially now that the servers are down for that game.
Yes.
When you think of games that would benefit, like, Shadow of the Colossus, I think, was a game that benefited from, like, whatever you think of the aesthetic choices they made, I think it allowed an audience of people to experience that game in a way that is different than going back to playing that on a PS2 and even the PS3 version. And Demon's Souls is, like, a tremendous game. I went back and played it after I'd experienced I played it just before Bloodborne came out, I think.
It's a great, it's genuinely a great game. Like,
I hope they don't touch the balancing if they went around doing that, because I loved so I played Demon's Souls as a magic user because I never touched magic in any of the games. And magic is just so hilariously kind of unbalanced in Demon's yep. Souls, where like you can kind of just sit back and like shoot this magic arrow over and over and really fuck up things in the world. And it's just it's especially if you like the games, it's like so enjoyable to go back and see the one that, you know, if you've played the others, chances are there's a good chance you haven't played Demon's Souls because so many people came on the Dark Souls train.
Right.
And that game would just really benefit from a layer of polish to the aesthetic that was more than just giving it 60 frames a second or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, totally. So that would be a big surprise. That would be there's my other long shot. There you go.
Demon's Souls remastered.
Demon's Souls remastered from FromSoft. Let's go. Or from what's the name of the remaster company you're talking about?
So I can't remember. Blue isn't it? It's Blue something.
Blue Estate. There it is. That's
Blue
it.
Blue Estate.
Oh, yeah. It's not that. All right, I think that's going to do it for us. It's a long one. We will be out in LA starting tomorrow.
Oh, God.
It's so soon.
I should probably pack.
Me too. I should also probably pack. You can follow me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Danielle?
At Danielle RI.
How about you, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Lubbock.
Rob Zachney.
Fantasy Rob at Twitter.com.
Okay, wait a second.
Actually, we need to look
Hold
that
on,
up.
Yeah, please.
What? God,
Fantasy Rob.
Please. Oh, he's a Nazi. He's a Nazi.
He's not a Nazi.
No.
Okay.
He has never tweeted. He only follows 12 people.
Who's he follow? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Ashton Kutcher.
Okay.
Oh, shit. This might be
a lot of people I don't know. Ava Longoria, yeah, you know?
This is one of my old alts, I think. Okay.
This is one of your alts.
Yeah.
You were fan... Okay, gotcha. Classic Fantasy Rob, you know? you follow everything Waypoint does, waypoint.com. Nope, not true. Don't go to waypoint.com. It's not us. That's like a real estate firm or something like that.
Yeah.
Waypoint.vice.com, though. You can go there for us. You can also come to twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. And you can, again, please let people know to listen to us by going to our podcast page which you're listening to now, either on our site. You can like click, there's a little thing in the top right where you're like, if you want to link somebody to one of our podcasts easily, you can just go up there, click the little, it's kind of hamburger, it's those three horizontal lines in the top left, and then click listen, and that'll take you to all of our podcast posts. Or just send them the link on like iTunes or Stitcher or something if you feel like, oh wow, they did a good job talking about how good Anthem is. Here's the thing, Tuesday morning or Tuesday afternoon, Patrick and I have a CD Projekt Red meeting. We didn't even say... We said the word cyberpunk super quickly because I think you and I believe we're going to go see cyberpunk. I really hope that's cyberpunk, Patrick.
Oh, that would be... Anything else would be so sad.
Gwent 2.
Witcher 3 Game
Gwent
of the Year
2-2.
Edition.
Yep.
Yeah.
Gwent 2-2. Thank you, Danielle. So yeah, make sure to listen to all of us next week. We're all going out there. Also, I'm going to give a heads up, which is the week after that, we might do one stream, but we're going to like try to catch our breaths after E3 and so kind of be light on content the week after E3 and breathe a little bit and keep our heads down and come back and, you know, ease ourselves back into the flow, because there's been a lot of build up, and, you know, we'll split the year in half and take a little bit of a break right in the middle, if that makes sense. All right, everybody, we cannot wait to be out there at E3 and talking to you every day. I'm gonna go get lunch now, and then I'm gonna pack my bags, I guess. Until then, I think that's going to do it for us. Thanks to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle, what do we say to him?
Be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.